Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Crimes, Killers, Cults. You gonna say it?
And beers.
All right. Sometimes guests say it, sometimes they don't. But anyway, in case you're wondering what's going on, I'm sure all of you know that Paul had a deployment for the National Guard. We tried to get 6 weeks ahead, but we were only able to manage five. So, I didn't get the notes for this episode done in time for him to leave, you know, to get done before he left. So he's just like, well, find a fill-in, do that one, and I'll be back in for the following week. So sitting in with me today is AB from Mama Murdered a Podcast.
What is going on? Good morning.
We're proud to have you on with us. And this case is South Carolina, and you're from South Carolina. So I'm like, okay, she's the perfect one.
And I've never even heard of it.
That makes it even better.
I mean, like, I've heard the name, but I don't know any of the details.
Yeah, well, this one's, yeah, he's special.
I know, and you've hyped him up, and I'm like, come on, let's do it.
Oh, man. So before we get started, tell people a little bit about your podcast.
Oh, Lord, about me?
Yeah.
It's just me. Release every Wednesday. It's true crime. And I sometimes throw my snarky remarks in there.
She's sassy is what she's saying.
People are like, I love how you just dig at these guys.
Yeah. I listened to her podcast. I mean, you know, I had to check out for 7-8 weeks of JonBenet Ramsey. I'm not gonna lie, but
there's a lot people are. Well, then some people were like, "Oh, I can't. I don't want to listen to it 1 week at a time. I'm trying to wait until you finish it." And I'm like, "Lord, you're gonna be waiting a while, because that's the case that I could do an entire podcast on and never get bored with. That would be the case."
Yeah, that's just one that I've, you know, until there's a resolution, I'm not interested in that one, you know.
See, I'm the opposite. I'm like, I want to know every detail about every piece of evidence, because I feel like how can we be this far advanced in, you know, technology and sciences and forensics and still not know who did that?
Oh, I get that, and it's maddening. But I've heard enough episodes on it, you know.
I know. That was like the one case. Even when I was a kid, it was just all over tabloids and newspapers and magazines. So I think that's probably the case that started my entire spiral into what I am today.
Well, I am about 6 or 7 years older than you. Yeah, we'll go with that.
I got a birthday Wednesday. I feel like I'm getting kind of old.
you're still a pup.
I feels like I just turned 30 last week. It hasn't been a year already.
But that case, you know, I was probably in my 20s when that case broke, and it was just everywhere, you know. And so it's just like that one, I'm just kind of like, ugh. Nancy Grace.
See, I was 3 when it happened. And then my mom, I think my mom just like scared the shit out of me until like I was a teenager, because she would be like, you can't leave your window open. You know about JonBenet Ramsey.
Well, that is probably specifically why, you know, people, you know, younger people that are into true crime are fascinated with that case. Older people that were adults when it happened are probably just like, yeah, my take on that particular subject is probably pretty common around, you know, among people my age.
I would think so. I feel like I grew up on JonBenet Ramsey and Adam Walsh.
All right. Well, we're covering Larry Jean Bell. And if I call him Hall at some point in the episode, don't be surprised. It was Larry Hall. Which to this day is our most listened to episode for some reason. It was a good episode, but it was a really good story, fascinating story. But, you know, Larry Jean Bell, not Hall.
So Larry Hall was your most listened to episode.
Yeah, by far. It got picked up by some algorithm or something and just skyrocketed. I don't know exactly what happened. But
don't you love that?
Not really, because it's not real listens.
But it looks good.
It looks good. Yeah. So anyway, but we're going back to South Carolina. This is our third case from South Carolina. The first, obviously, was old Pee Wee Gaskins.
Oh, God, he's a real work of art, too.
That was a fun episode. The second was a Patreon episode, The Murder of Lindsay Lee, which took place in Lexington, South Carolina, which, ironically enough, is where a lot of the story takes place, Lexington. But 25 years earlier, this story takes place in 1985.
So I wasn't even alive yet.
Larry Jean Bell was an evil chucklehead who kidnapped and murdered two girls. One was a teenager and the other was just a child. And he is strongly suspected in two more cases, you know, for the same reason that Ivan Milat and BTK are suspected in unsolved cases. The evidence points directly at him, but there isn't enough tangible evidence to charge him. But it doesn't really matter anyway, because old Larry Bell was fried by old Sparky in 1996.
96.
He was the last person ever fried in South Carolina.
I'm sitting here thinking that seems a little late to be using old Sparky.
We'll get there.
Okay.
Larry kidnapped the teenager, raped her, made her write a last will and testament, which he mailed to her family.
Wow.
He then began calling the family on the phone, specifically wanting to talk to the girl's older sister, who he had also fixated on. He wasn't able to get to the sister because the family was locked down tight. And so he did the same to a 9-year-old girl. And when he was convicted, he claimed to be Jesus Christ.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. No, I'm kidding.
I was like, wait. I have so many questions.
But anyway, Lexington, South Carolina is a large suburb of the state capital of Columbia. But in 1985, it was a quiet little town. Everybody knew each other. Nobody locked their doors. And do you really believe it when they say that nobody ever locked their doors? I don't.
I do, because I grew up in that.
No. Okay. It's just
I also live in one of those tiny, tiny, tiny towns where, you know, quote unquote, nothing like this ever happens.
Well, that was Lexington.
Bill, to this day, my keys are in my car 24/7. To this day in 2024.
I'll cut that out.
That is where I live. Yeah.
You might wake up and find your car gone one morning if I
Hey, I'm trying to get me a new Bronco anyways.
Okay. Well, in that case, her address is no. But still, Moida was something that didn't happen in Lexington. And even in Columbia, it wasn't very frequent at the time. Sources for this book are A Call from Hell, The True Crime Story of Larry Jean Bell, A Small Town Monster, and The Crime That Shook a Nation by Giovanna Ortiz. And why
did a lot of reading.
Hell do these. Yeah, just on the title of the book.
Yeah.
What is it with these true crime books?
Wait, that was one book?
That was one book. That was the name of one book.
Oh my God, I thought you just listed off the title.
No, that was one book.
Oh my gosh.
Like, it's like after you read the title of the book, you open the book up, page one will be chapter two.
Yeah.
But, and then forensicfilesnow.com and a little bit of wiki. I use wiki to get the, you know, the as a starting point, you know, but
I feel like I would like to go into wiki and just really mess with some stuff. Just to see how long it would stay up.
Somebody on the New York Jets Wikipedia page, somebody deleted everything and just wrote the New York Jets suck. This was about 10 or 15 years ago.
Oh, gosh.
But I didn't know about this puke until recently. And I had ordered the Ivan Milat book, and something happened with that order, and I didn't get it, and I had to cancel it. So I ordered the Milat book again, and Amazon said that they would refund me, like, into my bank account, and they didn't. So I broke out my Karen wig, and I called Amazon, and I raised hell.
Mm-hmm.
5 to 7 business days to refund me. So I'm just like, just credit it to my account. So I went looking for another book to buy and stumbled across this one.
So this case, you were supposed to cover this case.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the universe saying, Bill, cover this.
Yeah, there's a small handful of podcasts that have covered them. And I might buy more from this author because it's really good. I like her style and everything, but she has a lot of the same cases that Ryan Greene has books on that I already own. Like, and I have like 8 Ryan Greene books right now in my bookcase that I haven't even opened yet. So, Larry Jean Bell was born October 30th, 1949 in Ralph, Alabama. He had 3 sisters and a brother. And the family moved frequently, and Larry graduated from Eau Claire High School in Columbia, South Carolina in 1967. Trained as an electrician, began working as one for a couple of years. He got married, had a son, but joined the Marines in 1970. He didn't last long in the Marines because he was discharged not even a year into his service because he shot himself in the knee while cleaning his gun.
So he cheddar bobbed himself.
Yeah, a real winner, this guy. Once he recovered from this horrific war injury, you know, there's no word on how, if that's how he played it off, but I'd bet a dollar that he did. Like, yeah, I was shot in Vietnam.
Yeah, I bet more than that.
Yeah. But he worked as a prison guard for 1 month in the state prison in Columbia. And I bet he had some crazy story about something happening there too, but likely he just got scared of all the inmates. I mean, who accidentally shoots themselves while cleaning a gun?
People who kill people.
Or people who want an easy way out of the military.
Or that. I didn't even think of that.
Step one of cleaning the gun is unload it.
Oh, yeah. Even I know that. Yeah, he's like, I don't think I like it here very much.
This guy was a coward. And after that, he and his wife and kid moved to Rock Hill, South Carolina, which if it weren't for the North Carolina-South Carolina state lines, Rock Hill would be a suburb of Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Lived in Rock Hill for several years.
I grew up right beside a Charlotte.
Yeah, I've been to a lot of places in this. There's one particular location that is outlined in the book. I've been at that exact intersection. We'll get to that. But May 31st, 1985, it was the end of spring, and it was already 100 degrees out because it gets hotter in the Carolinas than it does in Florida, believe it or not.
I believe it. I live here. It's like Satan lives here.
Yeah, but yeah, and I've said this on a few episodes, but in South Carolina, you know, in Florida, it might get over 100 degrees, maybe 3 to 5 times a year.
It's the humidity.
Well, and the humidity. The humidity is about the same, but in South Carolina, it might dip below 100 degrees 3 or 4 times a year during the summer. And,
yeah.
And also, but. Summer doesn't last as long in South Carolina as it does in Florida.
I don't know. I feel like we have summer except for 1 month of the year.
June to
it's
October.
It's supposed to be like 75 degrees today. It's February.
Yeah, it's going to get into the 80s here. But between, you know, June to October, it's like 90s, like upper 90s in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But so Sherry Faye Smith had just come home from a pool party at a friend's house, and she was excited because she was about to graduate high school. Her senior trip was just 2 days away, and after that, there was going to be a class trip to the Bahamas, so she was pumped.
Yeah.
She had also been selected to sing the national anthem at her commencement ceremony. And, you know, the Smiths were a religious family. They had family prayer every single morning all together. And Sherry, her parents, you know, Bob, who was a pastor, and Hilda, her mother, her older sister, Dawn, would all gather and pray to start the day. And I bring that up because it's relevant later, or like I'd like to say, put a knife in that.
Yeah.
Instead of a pen. Put a pen in that. I used to say put a pen in that, but I'm just like, you know what?
This is
a true crime.
True crime podcast.
Put a knife in that.
Put a knife in that.
So Sherry's friends at the pool party were the last people to see her alive, yet technically Larry Bell was the last to see her, but he wasn't human.
So how old was she again?
She was 17.
About to graduate.
About to graduate.
Okay.
Yeah, he was something that a subhuman would scrape off of his foot.
Okay. Perfect. Love that analogy.
Oh, and he really is. God damn this guy. I mean, yeah, he's not like David Parker Ray, you know, Toy Box Killer, depraved, or he's not like sadistic like that, but he's still a sick fuck.
That's what we specialize in.
Yeah, this guy's in
like a category of his own.
Yeah, and
oh gosh.
It's not clear exactly how long Belle was stalking Sherry and Dawn. Well, just Sherry, because Dawn, we'll get there. But I was getting ahead of myself in the notes. But but he was definitely following Sherry that day. And she drove her Chevette home. And she stopped at the end of their lawn driveway to check the mail. She was barefoot, and she was wearing a bathing suit underneath a pair of shorts and a shirt. And Sherry pulled some letters out of the mailbox, and right then a car pulled up behind her. A man got out and said something to her and then approached her. Sherry was trusting and friendly, and she may have thought that he was lost and needed directions or something like that. That if we're going to write a book, they're not asking for directions.
No, just like it's never a mannequin.
It's never a mannequin.
And they're never asking for directions.
There's never a shortcut.
No.
So, but as soon as the man got close to Sherry, he grabbed her and pushed the barrel of the gun of a gun into her side and told her to get into the car. She obeyed, and the man took off, leaving Sherry's Chevette running with the driver's door open and the letters scattered on the ground. Sherry's father, Bob, was the first to notice that something was wrong. He saw the abandoned car, and he went to investigate. There he found the car running, the door open, one shoe in the car, one on the ground, and the letters. He also found Sherry's purse in the car, which had her medication, but no Sherry. And there were shoe prints. There were shoe footprints leading away from the car. And it was pretty obvious what had happened.
Yeah.
Now, Sherry had a condition called water diabetes. Her body had a hard time regulating fluids, and she could very quickly become dehydrated. And remember, it was extremely hot that day, so she needed that medicine badly.
I've never even heard of water diabetes.
I hadn't either. I looked it up, and it's just easiest to say her body had a hard time regulating fluids.
So she wouldn't have left without her medication, though.
Right. So the family panicked and called police. Hilda jumped in her car and took off, searching the neighborhood, didn't find anything. The family prayed as they waited for police to arrive. In South Carolina in 1985, you had to wait 24 hours before somebody could be reported missing. But because Sherry was a diabetic without her medication, combined with the obvious signs of a kidnapping, the police responded very quickly. They responded with one of the largest searches in Lexington's history.
Okay, good, because that was going to really piss me off.
Yeah,
I just knew you were going to be like that, and they had to wait and pray for 24 hours.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have made any difference. Larry Bell was...
said you were going to do it.
Yeah.
You called it.
This guy was cunning and very, very meticulous in covering his tracks.
Mm.
So aerial searches were sent out. The governor's office's emergency preparedness division set up a trailer on the Smith's property to use as a base of operation, with telephones, radios, and cameras. They were manned and running 24 hours a day. I mean, they set up an outpost at their house.
So they did their job.
Yeah, they did.
Kudos to them.
Yeah. They wanted it there in case Sherry came back, or if the abductor had decided to stalk the family. Another reason they pounced on this case is because the authorities knew the Smiths. I mean, they were very involved in the community. They were a close-knit family. It was very unlikely that Sherry would have run away. And police captain Bob Ford, he said in an interview, she's not a runaway. We're not accepting any theories that she ran away from home. And good on you. Because
yeah, exactly.
another rule, they didn't run away from home.
90% of the time, they did not run away from home.
No.
Something is wrong. Can we act accordingly?
Yeah, that's in too many of these cases. Oh, you ran away.
Yeah.
Run away.
Right, and then by the time they realize, like, maybe they didn't run away, it's far too late for something to be done.
Well, like Ivan Milat. I mean, by the time they finally realized that, hey, these people weren't running away, there was, you know, there was 30 missing people.
Yeah.
We covered Ivan Milat previous to this episode. The Australian serial killer that the Wolf Creek movie franchise was based on. Australian. But calls. What?
Your Australian accent.
Foster's beer. Australian for beer. But calls immediately came in, people saying that they had seen suspicious vehicles. One neighbor said that he had seen Sherry at the mailbox as he drove by. He had seen a reddish purple or maroon colored car coming up the street in the opposite direction that he was coming from. He described it, and he thought it to be like a 82 to 84 Oldsmobile Cutlass.
So people did notice. There's a car that's not supposed to be here. They even took notice of what kind of car it was.
All right. He also saw the car stop at the mailbox, but he didn't think anything of it. He drove back by. I guess he forgot something. But the Chevette was there, but the other car and Sherry were not. And him calling in, if he had reported it right then when it happened, it wouldn't have made any difference.
So either way, none of it would have mattered.
Right, because Hilda's mom was out, you know, speeding through the neighborhood like within minutes. So So him reporting that wouldn't have made a damn bit of difference. There was no luck on day one, but the search continued the next day. Helicopters, bloodhounds, over 100 people searching the woods in a dragnet formation, not even caring about the heat. Like I said, everybody loved the Smiths. They had tapped the phone at the Smiths' house, and they literally thought of everything. But the only thing that they could come up with was a red bandana that belonged to Sherry, and it was a good distance away, so they believed that she may have thrown it out of the car to be found.
On purpose.
Yeah. The 20 miles of land had been covered. Two volunteers had passed out due to heat exhaustion, but they basically had found nothing.
And that just sucks because they're actually taking it seriously. They're actually doing their job. They actually have more than just, you know, one thing implemented in play. And it still doesn't matter. It still wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, this guy's an evil genius. I don't know. He's an idiot, but he's also a genius. Yeah, and I mean, I'm going to give credit where credit's due. I mean, I'm not going to call somebody a total bumbling fool if they're not.
I feel like there's a few of them that it's like you're so stupid, but you're like, how did you get away with it so long?
Dumb luck, like BTK.
Exactly.
Until the floppy disk incident.
Like, you just had to, you know, you needed your attention. You needed your little fix, and it got you caught.
Yeah.
Like, don't be dumb. Don't do dumb shit.
Yeah.
Or do dumb shit that
yeah.
way.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
But, if, yeah.
So SLED, or South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, expected a ransom demand to be coming soon. And personally, I wouldn't have banked on that. Yeah, that's
did look like a kidnapping.
Right. But a ransom demand?
From a regular family.
Joe Schmo. This was a gorgeous teenage girl who was practically an adult. So really, how often do ransom demands come out on kidnappings anyway? I mean, it does happen, but it's rare.
Rare. Yeah.
They happen, but not enough to be able to say, okay, we should expect a ransom demand next. I mean, this honestly seems like something Dick Darwin would say. And Dick Darwin's a recurring character. And I thought about bringing him into this episode, but he was in the Ivan Milat episode. I think it was in the Ivan Milat. Maybe. I don't know. He's been in a lot of
episodes.
You
got a good memory.
But I'd be looking for nearby sex offenders.
Yeah.
Although a ransom demand would be the best case scenario for Sherry's sake. I mean, she's still alive.
Yeah, but she's really pretty.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty accessible for where it happened, where she was. I feel like sex offenders would probably be the best bet to start with.
They should have rounded up, just like started interviewing registered sex offenders.
And then maybe then, if you don't find anything, then let's play with a ransom idea.
Well, they could have been waiting. All they had to do was have somebody. They already had somebody sitting there waiting by the phone.
Get somebody on something else.
Yeah, like the sex offenders.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a registered sex offender, though, so it wouldn't have
so
made
that
any
wouldn't
difference.
Have helped either.
Nope. But no ransom demand came.
I just knew you were going to say, like, oh, if they would have checked sex offender registries, they would have found him. You're like, nah, he wasn't on there.
No,
it
he
wouldn't
wasn't
have done
on
any
there.
good, though.
But still, that's a better place to check than, all right, next. Dick Darwin here. They need to wait for a ransom demand because every single kidnapping case has a ransom demand. Everybody knows that. I'm going to get an email from Dick Darwin.
You're going to get sued.
angry that I botched impersonated him. Sorry, Dick. Yeah, it's not Dick Darwin unless we have his theme music behind.
Yeah. Add that in.
70s porn. But no risk.
Somebody's going to get mad we're having fun on this.
Oh, that's just CKCB. Or CKCW these days.
Yeah. Got your aqua.
Crimes, killers, cults, and water.
Yeah.
I'm like BTK. I like to hydrate myself. It's my thing.
Did you give yourself your own nickname also?
No.
Okay. You're like, just call me Bill. My name's Eric.
Yeah. I don't care. I'm proud of my series on BTK. Especially,
yeah, it was really good.
Especially after the when we
the
covered
first ones,
the yeah,
yeah.
I
it
had
was
to.
A big improvement.
But no ransom demand came, and there was little else that they could do now. She could be in Columbia by now, or she could even be much farther away,
or even across state lines in North Carolina.
Yeah, or Georgia, or wherever. Hell, she by this time she could have been in Ohio. So SLED contacted the FBI. Now, abduction by a stranger is rare. The first thing the FBI did was look into the backgrounds of the Smiths, and of course they came up squeaky clean. Squeaky clean, well-respected members of the community with no enemies to speak of. Sherry and Don were both gorgeous. They were both very big into music, and they both wanted to make it big as Christian singers. And lots of people who knew them believed that they had a very legitimate shot at accomplishing it. Yeah, Don lived in Charlotte, and she worked as a country singer at the Carowinds Amusement Park, which straddles the North Carolina and South Carolina state line.
I grew up at Carowinds.
Yeah. Is it still open?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I've read something about it closing. I don't know. But
And how wholesome is it they want to be Christian singers?
well, they're religious family. Dad's a
I know, but
pastor.
that's like the most pure thing.
Yeah.
Like to want to do as a career. I just want to sing Christian music.
Yeah. There's a roller coaster at Carowinds, like halfway through it, there's a sign up that says you're now entering South Carolina.
Yes. Yeah, you can literally stand in South Carolina and North Carolina at the same time.
Yeah, but the roller coaster runs right across state lines.
Yeah.
But Sherry had hoped to join Dawn in working there at Carowinds, and she was pretty much guaranteed the job once she had finished high school. But and there are several colleges in Charlotte, not to mention Winthrop University in Rock Hill. So, I mean, she could have her cake and eat it too. But there was all sorts of speculation about why Sherry was taken. Her father spoke at prisons to inmates. Could it be a jealous rival, a jilted boyfriend, maybe a jilted would be boyfriend? Yeah, a pun, or maybe it could just be a sick, perverted fuck who. Anyway,
I feel like they never want to take it there, though. Nobody ever wants to say that out loud.
It's a sick, perverted fuck.
Yeah, they're like, it has to be somebody she knew or somebody that fixated on her that, you know, was obsessed with her.
Yeah.
They can't just come right out with it and be like, well, probably was a perverted sick fuck that did this.
It was the Dixie Mafia.
Oh, Lord.
That's a series waiting to happen.
Yes, it is.
Hey, we ought to jump on that one, collaborate.
Let's do
a multi-part series on the Dixie Mafia.
I'm the queen of multi-part series.
We'll have to wait till Paul gets back on that one, though. I don't want to do that one without him.
Oh, let's do it.
So upon hearing the news, Dawn came to Lexington to be with her family. And she even had a big show for the next day that was obviously canceled. And by the time Dawn got there, her entire family was there, grandmothers, aunts, uncles, even Sherry's boyfriend, Richard. They all prayed together, and they all believed that she would come home safe and sound. Hey, police questioned Dawn, thinking that she might have some input, like anything, and they were grasping at straws, but Dawn had nothing to add. The worst that they came up with was that her father could be a little strict at times, and that's not even a red flag. That's just normal.
Yeah, man, they were probably hoping that Dawn, they were close, that maybe she said something to her that she wouldn't have said to somebody else.
Right. Finally, the phone rang at the police department a day or two later, and somebody was, in fact, demanding a ransom. The caller said, "I have Sherry. I want you to put the Smith's phone number on TV so I can talk to them directly. If you don't do this, I'll add Sherry to the missing persons list."
Did he say it like that?
Oh, he's from South Carolina, so.
Oh, God, is that what I sound like?
No. That's not what you sound like. That's what in my mind this idiot sounds like.
We're saying it right now that that's what he sounded like.
Yeah, but that's,
confidently we're saying that.
But this isn't Larry.
Oh, well, okay. Keep going.
So his demands, take a guess.
It's not money.
It was money.
Was it?
Yeah.
$2,000. Wow, he was trying to get rich. Like,
but the police weren't taking the bait, and they traced the call to a phone booth and waited near it to see if he would show again. He didn't. But this was all a hoax by a 27-year-old chucklehead, Edward Robinson, who had been released from prison several months prior. He had done time for grand larceny and assault, and he wanted to go back to prison.
Okay.
Maybe he had a daddy there that he was missing.
He found him on prison Tinder, actually.
No, he had this hot daddy in prison that he was missing, that good prison loving.
you know, he's like walking around, like trying to hold his pocket.
God damn it. He wanted to go back to prison. Maybe he had a daddy there. He actually asked police if he could go back to prison. They told him the only way that he could go back would be if he committed another crime and violated his probation. Well, he got his wish, and he was arrested, and he got 5 years for extortion, obtaining money under false pretenses, obstruction of justice, and making an obscene phone call. He got his daddy back and was holding his pocket in the prison yard once again.
That's a thing. I swear that's a real thing. That's prison how break. You claim your territory.
Prison Break was a really good show.
So hot. So hot.
It's a little out there with like the logistics of it, but it was still a really good show.
Yeah.
There was another hoax call from an 18-year-old chucklehead saying he knew who did it and where she was would tell for a price of, take a guess.
5,000.
Lose a zero.
Who the fuck is making ransom demands then for $502,000? I get this was like a little while back, but even then, that was not a good get-rich-quick scheme.
Yeah. As days went by, tensions grew. The desperation was setting in. And June 2nd, the high school graduation took place without Sherry. But by Monday, June 3rd, things went from bad to worse.
So she never even got to graduate.
No. A call came into the Smith's home very early in the morning with the caller asking to speak to Hilda. Bob answered it and asked if he could help the caller. The caller said he would only talk to Hilda, and he said it was about Sherry. And then he began naming off things that the public wouldn't know. The guy was pretending to be a cop, and Hilda thought that he was until the call turned sinister. He said for the Smiths to expect a letter from Sherry in the mail that afternoon, and he also told the Smiths to call the sheriff and get him to call off the search, and then the chucklehead hung up.
What is wrong with these people?
Oh, this was him. This was Larry.
What is wrong with these people? Why are there so many calls to this girl's parents? They're like being traumatized more than they even are.
Well, this was the first call that had actually come into the household. The other two calls had been made to the police station.
I feel like the parents still had to have known about it.
Oh, yeah. But like, they're going to call off the search.
He's like, do what I say, bitch.
Yeah. But Hilda told Don and Bob about the call, and then they told the police, and they traced it to a grocery store payphone 10 miles from the Smith's home. And by the time the police got there, the caller was long gone, and a search of the area turned up nothing, and the phone had been wiped clean of fingerprints. A payphone is something where you, at the phone, where you put a quarter into it and dial.
Are you
number.
Being funny?
Not, I am, but not to you.
Oh, I was like, come on.
Younger listeners, like, like those teenagers, that there was that viral video of them trying to figure out how to use a rotary phone.
Oh, yeah. If you ask a teenager how they would answer the phone, they don't use their thumb and their pinky. They like hold the phone.
Yeah.
They hold a cell phone, an imaginary cell phone.
The police determined that this guy was smart and this likely wasn't his first time. Yeah, think. But this was very, very early in the morning, and the police went to the post office, and three men went through every single letter that was going out that day until they found one going to the Smith's house. And holy paper cut, Batman, that must have been hell.
That's a lot of mail, I feel like.
Yeah. Lucky you weren't in Columbia.
Yeah.
Precautions were taken to make sure it wasn't a letter bomb. And Bob came to the post office, and the letter was carefully removed from the envelope. And Bob confirmed it, that it was Sherry's handwriting and that she had, in fact, written the letter. And on top of the page, it said Sherry had written God is love, and next to it she wrote Shaw Richard with a heart around it. And this was a reference to her boyfriend. And I'm gonna read the letter. I normally would have Paul read it, but he's not here, and I didn't send you the files.
No,
I
you
forgot
did not.
About that. But but these are her words, but they're, keep in mind, they're under duress. There may be some errors, and we're not going to put any emphasis on the errors, you know, by Sherry. She's the victim here. This is rough. So, June 1st, 1985 at 3:10 a.m. I love y'all. Last will and testament. I love you, Mommy and Daddy, Robert, Don, and Richard, and everybody else and all other friends and relatives. I'll be with my father now, so please don't worry. Just remember my witty personality and the great special times we all shared together. Please don't let this ever ruin your lives, and just keep living one day at a time for Jesus. Some good will come of this. My thoughts will always be with you. Be with you and in you. And then in parentheses, it says casket closed. I loved you all so damn much. Sorry, Dad, I had to cuss once. Jesus, forgive me. Richard, sweetie, I really did and always will love you. You and treasure our special moments. I ask one thing, though. Accept Jesus as your personal savior. My family has been the greatest influence in my life. Sorry about the cruise money. Somebody please go in my place. Sorry if I ever disappointed you in any way. I only wanted to make you proud of me because I have always been proud of my family. Mom, Dad, Robert, and Don, there's so much I want to say that I should have said before now. I love you. I know y'all love me and will miss me very much, but if y'all stick together like we always did, y'all can do it. Please do not become hard or upset. Everything works out for the good for those who love the Lord. My love always, or all my love always. I love y'all with all my heart. Sharon, Sherry Smith. P.S. Nana, I love you so much. I always felt like your favorite. You were mine. I love you a lot. And then Sherry ended the last will and testament with a drawing of a smiley face.
So even during all that, she's still worrying about everybody else.
Yeah, and she likely
somebody go in my place on the cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Please make sure you get right with God. Like, sorry, Dad, I had to curse once. Like, even all that, she's still worrying about everybody else, trying to make sure they're okay.
Yeah, she probably had a gun to her head as she wrote this.
Probably so.
Yeah, that was rough.
That was sad.
But the date on this letter proved that Sherry hadn't been killed immediately. It was a minimum of 36 hours after she had been taken. And she had not had her medication, and this sick fuck told her that he was going to kill her and force her to write out a fucking will. I mean, you know, I mean, what an asshole.
She's 17.
Mm-hmm.
What can she possibly have to put in a will besides being able to just say goodbye to everybody?
Yeah, I know. And, but I mean, put yourself in that mindset. You know, you're 17, you've got this creepy sick fuck with a gun at you, just basically he said, I'm going to kill you. You might as well write a note. And you know, he's probably already raped her at this point. In fact, well, spoiler, he has. But yeah, just put yourself in that mindset of being forced to write your own last will and testament.
And then you don't even know if he's actually going to send it. You don't even, like, you don't know if your family, your parents, your grandparents are even going to be able to read this.
Yeah.
You know, he could say, yeah, I'll make sure they get it. But at this point, Are we trusting what he's saying? Because I feel like no.
Well,
the it letter. Amazes me that they did get the letter.
Well, remember I told you this guy was a cruel bastard?
Yeah, I do. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
So, I feel like this is like salt on a wound.
Mm-hmm. Police then added sexual motivation and more than likely no personal connection to the abductor to the profile that they were putting together. And this profile was being put together by criminal profiling wizard John Douglas, who was portrayed on Mindhunter.
Yeah.
And this one was difficult for him because he had two young daughters of his own. Douglas is a fucking rock star. And everybody knows.
I was going to say, he's in a lot.
Everybody,
he's like a
everybody
superstar.
Everybody in true crime knows this. But yeah, I would like to interview John Douglas, not because of what he got right, because he got just about everything right. I'd like to interview him about things that he might have gotten wrong. Not to poke fun, just hear him talk about...
Genuinely, yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be a compelling interview.
I think you are onto a good idea.
But... So if anybody has contact information for John Douglas, ckcvpodcast@gmail.com. Or John Douglas, if you're listening to this, ckcbpodcast@gmail.com. Want to interview you.
Hold on. I will in on that episode also.
Okay. I will allow it.
I will sit in silence, but I would really like to be there.
Yeah. Trying to get Charlie Otero on with Jodie Plouchet to just hear them talk about survival and all that stuff. But I haven't gotten any reply back from Charlie. Jody is like, yeah, let's get him. Let's do it. But anyway, Douglas believed that Sherry's abductor had prior criminal experience because of the level of sophistication that was shown in the kidnapping. They'd gotten her without being seen in broad daylight or without being able to be positively identified. He was able to cover his tracks. He disguised his voice on the phone. No fingerprints, no evidence or anything like that at all. He liked to be in control. And they also deduced that he likely had experience as an electrician because of how he had disguised his voice. He had one of those scattering things.
Oh, I was like, what the fuck does that have to do with being an electrician?
Yeah.
I got you.
So when he did, it sounded like this when he talked. It sounded like Batman.
Yeah, I was like, what does that have to do with, how did they come up with electrician? And then you said the voice changer, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, so they figured he was a white male, late 20s, early 30s, divorced or estranged, possibly had kids who wanted nothing to do with him, insecure in life, which is why he sought control and crimes, not attractive, low self-esteem. So this would be the only way that he could get a gorgeous girl would be by force.
Right.
But put a knife in that.
Okay. Got you.
So obviously this is a very bad day for the family, but later that day, the phone rang. Dawn answered it, and it was a disguised voice asking for Mrs. Smith. Dawn said, no, it's Dawn. He asked for Hilda again, and Dawn asked if she could ask who was calling. The voice said no. Hilda got on the phone, and the voice asked if they had gotten the mail that day, and if she believed him now. Hilda said that she wasn't sure because she hadn't heard, she wasn't sure if she believed him because she hadn't heard any word from Sherry, and she needed to know that she was alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
The voice said she'd know in 2 or 3 days. Hilda asked why 2 or 3 days, and the man just said, pull off the search, and hung up.
So just dragging it out, making it worse.
Yep.
Still.
The call was traced to a payphone outside a pharmacy just a few miles from the house. Police rushed there, but once again, this puke was gone without a trace.
Mm.
But, they're going to call off a search. Instead, they went on TV making a plea to him saying that they love her, they miss her, and please send her back. But some good did come of this. A woman called the police saying that she had seen something. March 31st, she had seen a white man who was distracted and almost hit her head on. And just seconds prior, she had seen Sherry pull into her driveway. She made eye contact with the man, and then she saw him in her rear view stop next to Sherry's car. She thought nothing of it. Why would she? You know, nothing like this has ever happened in Lexington before.
Body passes you in a car every day.
Yeah. She described a white man, thin, with a receding hairline, round face, clean shaven, and police were able to release a composite sketch based on that description. Later that evening at the Smith's house, a voice, the phone rang and Dawn answered. Your voice came on. Dawn, did you come down from Charlotte? Dawn said yes and asked who was calling. The caller then asked for Hilda. And I have the transcript of the call here. And damn, I wish Paul was here, because I have to read this. Yes, I did. Dawn replied, and who's calling? And she asked again. He says, I need to speak to your mother. I'm like, okay, she's coming. Tell her to hurry. She's hurrying. Tell Sherry I love her. He ignored her. He ignored this. Instead, he asked if the family had received the letter that Sherry had written them. Yes, we did. And then she handed the phone to her mother. He asked, did you receive Sherry's letter? And Hilda says, pardon, I can't hear you. It's not very clear. Speak louder. He says, did you receive the letter today? She says, yes, I did. Tell me one thing, he demanded. Hurry. Shaw Richard. What? Hilda says. She says, there's a little heart on the side, Hilda clarified. Shaw Richard was written on the side of the page. How many pages? He asked. Two pages. Okay, was it a yellow legal pad? Yes. And on the front of the page, it said, Jesus is love, right? No. Hilda could remember the contents of the terrible letter very clearly. It said, God is love. And then the caller says, well, God is love. Hilda says, right. He then says, okay, so now you know this isn't a hoax call. She says, yes, I know that. He says, I'm trying to do everything possible to answer some of your prayers. So please, in the name of God, work with us here. Can you answer me one question, please? You're very kind and you seem to be a compassionate person. And yeah, you know, I can just imagine Hilda just wanting to reach through the phone and strangle this puke.
Yeah.
And I think you know how I feel about being Sherry's mother and how much I love her. Can you please tell me if she's all right physically without her medication? And this is ridiculous. He says, Sherry is drinking a little over 2 gallons of water per hour and is going to the bathroom right afterwards. She's not drinking 2 gallons of water an hour. That alone would kill somebody.
That's a lot of water.
That would kill somebody. There was a water drinking contest where, you know, it's like drink a whole bunch of water. And this one woman, I think she wound up drinking like 7 gallons and it wound up killing her.
Oh yeah. I remember that. I remember reading about that.
Happened in Florida, I think.
That doesn't surprise me.
But then he says, okay, this has gone too far. Please forgive me. Have an ambulance ready at any time at your house. And at Sherry's request, she requested only immediate family come and share Metz and the ambulance attendants. She don't want to make a circus out of this. Fuck off, dude.
And well, Hilda's just being a badass mom at this point, because I don't know if I could do that.
Hilda and Dawn. Because Dawn winds up being the recipient of the phone calls later. Mm. And where she said, casket closed in parentheses.
Mm-hmm.
Anything happened to her, he said to her, one of the requests is that she did not put in there was that her hands to be on her stomach, cross hands like she was praying in the casket. And Hilda's like, "What now?" And the caller says, "Cross her hands." At that point, I would have been like, "Okay, she's dead. She's definitely dead."
Yeah. I feel like he's saying it without saying it.
She Hilda misunderstood what he said though. She's like, "Well, why would anything happen to you? We don't want to harm you. I promise. We just want Sherry, all in well." And okay, now the suspect said, "The sheriff Metz realized that this is not a hoax call." So he's like, I want everybody to know that I'm for real. I'm the prick that took your daughter." But yes, he knows that this isn't a hoax. "Well, tell him to just forget about all those suspects. And the only thing that, when I talked to you Monday morning, 2:30 in the morning, the first time, yes, I did not realize. I thought you were a police officer. Okay, then listen real carefully. I got to go. Hurry. I know these calls are being traced, correct?" If I were her, I would have said, "Duh."
Is he still using the voice changer?
Yes.
So that's probably why stuff's getting like misconstrued and why she's a little bit confused.
Yeah.
I feel like it would probably be harder to understand.
But then the caller made one of the most cryptic and unsettling. Yeah. I get
words are hard, Bill.
I get. Have you listened to my podcast? I stumble over words. I invent words.
I do the same thing, especially when I'm reading.
Yeah,
but it doesn't happen as much when I'm just talking.
Oh, I invent words. The most infamous one is rapled.
I like it. It's got a little pizzazz to it.
But he then says, "I want to tell you one other thing. Sherry is now a part of me physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. Our souls are now one."
Okay.
Hilda's like, "Your souls are now one with Sherry?" Says, "Yes, and we're trying to work this out, so please do what we ask. You haven't been doing that. I don't understand, and she doesn't. And we sit here and watch TV, and we don't see no we." And she interrupted, "Why doesn't Sherry talk to me? You know, she knows me so well." She's like, "That." And then he says, that's why she asked me to communicate with you, not your husband. Aren't you aware of that?" "Yes," says Hilda, "I know that. And she would want you to talk to me." And it's hard to follow, but she's trying to keep him on the phone as long as possible. So she's placating this asshole, you know, just basically doing, you know, she's trying to keep him on. Maybe they can establish a trace, give him enough time to get there while he's still on the phone, you know?
Yeah, that's what I mean. He was like being the baddest mom. Like,
yeah.
She's on her boss mom shit right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like only a mom could sit on the phone with somebody that you know has and probably has killed your child.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to keep them on the phone all in the hopes that they would get caught.
Yeah.
That's some mom shit.
But once again, he continued to talk past her. And she said she does love y'all. And she said, you know, like, don't let this ruin your life. We're not going to let it ruin our lives. But listen, you tell Sherry one thing. What's that? There's no way my life could have ever had any happiness in it if Sherry left this world without, you know, without me bearing guilt that I had failed in such a bad way because I love her and I want to make her happy. I'll do anything. Oh, she knows that. I'll do anything to work it out. She doesn't have to come home, okay? I'm serious. She doesn't have to come home. I'll do anything. He says, "Oh, well, time's up. Well, time's up. Please have an ambulance ready at any time. At any time. This will not go any further, and it will be soon. The ambulance, you're not telling me that something's going to happen to her. Or The ambulance, Hilda says this. The ambulance, you're not telling me that something's going to happen to her and I'm going to have an ambulance? No, he replied. I'm telling you her condition. Hilda's, starting to freak at this point, but she still holds it together. Is her condition getting bad? Is that what you're trying to tell me? And he says, you know more about it than I do. I know I do, and that's why I'm worried about her. Well, you just have the ambulance, he snapped, and I'll tell you the location and tell Sheriff Metz to get all of his damn men in Saluda County, okay? God bless us all. Will you call me soon? Hilda asked. I will. Will you call me back tonight? I just need reassurance that she's okay. He's like, I've got to be careful. I've got to go now. And listen, please, please, please forgive me for all this. It just got out of hand. They always say it just got out of hand. They always say that.
Yeah.
I know. Listen, do me one thing, okay? What is that? He asked. Hurry. Just tell Sherry how much I love her. Just tell her that her daddy loves her. And her daddy will work for anything. Work anything out under the sun. And he admits that we got a lot of problems, but we'll work them out. And her brother and sister love her. And God bless you for taking care of my baby. And he says, Sherry's protected. And like I said, she is a part of me now. And God looks after all of us. Good night. Good luck to you. The police moved really fast in hope of catching him this time. And they managed to trace it to a payphone about 8 miles from the Smith's house in front of a business called Wall Street Store off of I-20 and Highway 204. But he was already gone. No trace of him. Like a ghost.
I feel like he was toying with her on purpose.
Yeah. Like I said, he's a cruel, sick fuck.
And then she's just like, wait, hold on. Why do we need an ambulance? What's going on? What happened?
Yeah, but Woody's like, okay, our souls are one now. Just like that right there tells me that he's raped and murdered her.
Yeah. Yeah.
But earlier in the month, a day before Mother's Day, another 17-year-old girl, Mary Lee Witten, had been kidnapped. Although she had been a troublemaker or delinquent when she was younger, she was trying to turn things around. She had gotten a job and she was making good strides. And on May 11th, she disappeared just after leaving her job. She was grabbed, stuffed into a trunk, and then taken into the woods where she was raped and her skull had been bashed in. And she was found 4 days later. She had defensive wounds in addition to the fatal wounds, and she had fought. Initially, a co-worker, James Fawcett, confessed but retracted and blamed it on a guy named Shane Parker, who was a witness to the abduction. Parker had no criminal record, but in 1984, Fawcett had taken and raped a 14-year-old girl at the same spot where Mary Lee was found. He was found guilty of Mary Lee's murder, and he was sentenced to life in prison. But Sherry's abduction meant that there, just 2 weeks later, meant that there were two sick fucks running around at the same time.
Was it actually somebody else?
Yeah. It was this Fawcett guy.
Oh, wait, who? Somebody confessed and then retracted it.
Fawcett. No, this guy has nothing to do with the Smiths. This is just a murder that happened 2 weeks prior to Sherry being taken.
So this poor little town's being rocked.
Yeah. But the Smiths and police and the community refused to give up. The search was expanded and sightings had been reported in nearby Saluda County. And it was getting much harder to keep the faith because of Sherry's medical condition. The Smiths went on TV again, this time directing the message to Sherry saying they loved her, but they also told Sherry the message they would never give up on finding her. And this was from the John Douglas playbook, and he had used that trick in the Atlanta child murders in pursuit of Wayne Williams. Basically, a veiled thing, saying, look, we're not going to stop looking.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That night, the phone rang again, and Don answered. And the call said to get Hilda on the phone, and he wanted to talk to both of them at the same time. He told them to get a pencil and paper ready. And I got to read again. You have the pen and paper? Yes. She's not on the phone yet. Well, I'll tell you this. Okay. You're aware of that was in Sherry's old handwriting, right? Yes, I am, okay? All right, now this is... he's talking with Dawn right now, waiting for Hilda to join mm-hmm. the call. This is in Sherry's own words. Okay. So listen carefully. Say nothing unless you're asked. Okay. Yeah, she's pissed. You can tell. Okay, and it's not necessary. I know these calls are taped. He paused. Dawn.
He's like, yep, sure
Yep.
are.
Yep.
Dumbass.
And traced, but that's irrelevant now. There's no money demanded. So here's Sherry Faye's last request. On the fifth day to put the family at rest, Sherry Faye being freed. Remember, we're just one soul now. When located, you'll locate both of us together. We are one. God has chosen us. Respect past and present requests, actual events and times. Jot this down. Hurry. Sounds to me like he's, well, I'm not going to jump ahead. All right, I'm doing it. John replied. 3:28 in the afternoon, Friday, May 31st, of Sherry. He's like, wait a minute, too fast. 3:28 in the afternoon. Sherry Faye was kidnapped by your mailbox with a gun. She had the fear of God in her, and she was at the mailbox. That's why she didn't turn back to her car. She had the fear of what? The fear of God, he said. The fear of God. Okay, 4:58 a.m. No, I'm sorry. Hold on a minute. 3:10 a.m. Saturday, the 1st of June, she handwrote what you received. 4:58 a.m. Saturday, the 1st of June. Okay, so at this point, Larry's just toying with him.
Yeah.
Very BTK-esque.
He's like, let me tell you everything I know so that you know that I'm legit.
You know, with 4:58, they became one soul. Became one soul.
So she likely was killed at 4:58.
Right.
Yeah.
On the other line, Hilda could be heard asking, what does that mean? No questions now, he said. All right. Last, between 4 and 7 Wednesday, tomorrow, have an ambulance ready. Remember, no circus. 4 and prayer. What? Wait. 4 and 7 a.m.? 4 and 7 in the afternoon tomorrow, he clarified. In the afternoon tomorrow. Okay, have an ambulance ready. Remember her request, no circus. Yeah, she requested that. I'm sure she did.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Dawn agreed. The suspect went on, prayers and relief coming soon. Please learn to enjoy life. Forgive. God protects the chosen. Sherry Faye's important last request, or important request, rest tonight and tomorrow. Good shall come out of this, and please tell Sheriff Metz, search no more. Blessings are near. Tomorrow, Wednesday, 4 in the afternoon until 7 in the evening. Ambulance ready. No circus. No circus. What does that mean? Dawn asked, but he ignored the question. You'll receive last instructions on where to find us. Please forgive Hildebrook. And do not kill my daughter, please. I mean, please let me. She's like, we love and miss y'all. The caller interrupted. Get good rest tonight. Listen, Hilda pleaded. And then he hung up. 5 days had passed since Sherry was taken. The family tried to keep hope alive, but it was getting harder. The next day around noon, Hilda answered. The caller said to get pen and paper. And he said, and I really wish that I hadn't X'd out of it because it was right there. He said, listen carefully. Take Highway 378 west to the traffic circle. Take the Prosperity exit. Go 1.5 miles, turn right at the sign, Moose Lodge number 103, and then go 1/4 mile, turn left at the white frame building, go back 1 yard, 6 feet. We're waiting. God chose us. A trace wasn't possible, but police went to that location and they found Sherry dead.
And he just keeps bringing God into this because he knows they're religious. I feel like that's just another way he's just fucking with them.
Yep. The family was devastated. The police who delivered the news, yeah, they cried and prayed with the family. That's got to be
one of
those. This
case is pissing me off.
I told you.
Like, I can feel my blood pressure getting high.
Sherry's body had been there for several days in the sweltering heat, and it was very difficult to determine the exact cause of death, but they were able to determine that Sherry had been dumped there. dragged, to be more specific, because there was a
drag. So she was there the whole time.
No, not at this place. There was a drag trail in the grass, and she was, yeah, you know, he killed her somewhere else and then brought her to this place to dump her.
But did he do, would he, did he bring her there when he said, or do you think she was already there?
She was already there because she had been decomposing in the heat for several days.
That's what I'm saying. So she had been in this spot the whole time.
The whole
Colin
time.
Falcon with the family.
The whole time, yeah.
Oh. Ain't no wonder he was like, call off the search, call off the search, call off the search, because they might have found her.
Yep.
Then he wouldn't have got to toy with the family.
Oh, he's not done toying with the family.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
But they were able to determine there was a drag trail in the grass, and she was also in the same clothes that she was wearing when she was taken. Although the cause of death couldn't be determined, they were able to say that she hadn't been beaten, stabbed, or shot. And they couldn't determine if she had been sexually assaulted, but I'm not even going to say
like
it.
She probably was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although they did surmise that Sherry had been suffocated. At a press conference, the sheriff said that he was concerned that the murderer would take his life if he didn't turn himself in. He believed this guy was afraid, you know, and he said he's like, I want you to know we have no intentions on killing you. We just want you to surrender. And this, in my opinion, is more Dick Darwin-esque logic. I mean, this is just the sheriff talking. I mean, John Douglas didn't think that this prick was going to off himself at all. You know, later the sheriff beat his chest saying that the killer would, you know, that it's like, you can keep jerking us around, but we're going to get you. Yeah. So this sheriff Metz is just throwing shit at the wall.
Just see what sticks.
But broken clocks right twice a day.
That's true.
In a streak of dumb luck, the killer called a Columbia news station after the press conference. Reporter Charlie Keyes answered, and the caller said, this is concerning Sherry Brown. He said that he couldn't live with himself, and he wanted to turn himself in. He wanted Charlie there to be there when he did it, and he wanted to call before he said where he was going to be. He was going to call the sheriff's house, and he wanted Charlie to be there at the sheriff's house to answer the phone. And he also wanted the priest from the Smith Church to be there. He also said that, you know, about Sherry, that, oh, it just went bad. All he wanted to do was make love to her. He didn't know about her medical issues. He got scared. Then he started wailing, God, please forgive me. So what do you think's happening here?
I'm so confused. Why is he still fucking with these people?
He's putting on a show and he's eating it up. And that's exactly what John Douglas thought, as well as believing that the killer would kill again. So
yeah, John Douglas is like, he is not going to off himself.
Mm-mm.
He is going to do this again, and he's going to be more perverse next time.
But he had seen the footage of the police, of the sheriff saying, oh, we're afraid that he's going to kill himself. So yeah. He's just like, you know what? I'm going to make him think
I'm going
to.
Let me play into this.
Yeah. Like I said, this guy is a fucking evil. He's on a whole different level. And the same day, the phone rang at the Smith's house, and Don's aunt Beverly answered it. It was a collect call for Don, and Beverly said that Don wasn't taking calls, but the caller demanded that Don get on the phone. It turned out Don was sedated, so the caller asked for Bob. Bob was at the funeral home. The operator seemed to be aware of what was going on, and the operator and Beverly stalled the caller, saying that they were trying to get Don woke up so that she could talk. You know, finally, Don came to the phone, and the caller said that he was calling to let her know that he was turning himself in. He demanded she talk to Charlie Keyes and said that a letter had been mailed to the Smith's house and to Keyes, and that she should read it. He also began to hint that he would kill himself. And this whole conversation is Dennis Rader-esque gibberish. I mean, this sounds like, you know, the weeks leading up to BTK's capture, like all the freaking bullshit that he put the Wichita police through.
You know? Promise if I send you a floppy disk, you can't track it? Do you think you promise?
You know, what winds up getting him got is almost as satisfying as the floppy disk.
Okay, good. Because this is aggravating me.
So, he even asked for Dawn. He even asked Sorry, Dawn. I had it right. You interrupted me.
I'm so sorry. I just realized I said wiki wiki. That is some shit I do when I know I messed up. I'm like wiki wiki. That way when I hear it, I'm like, oh, I need to edit that out.
I just leave them in. It's a CKCB staple, me getting tongue-tied and fumbling over words.
I'm like, hold on, let me help him. Wiki wiki.
He even asked Dawn for her forgiveness, saying that he couldn't go to prison, blah, blah, blah. I'm the victim. Feel sorry for me, blah, blah, blah. They'll send me to the electric chair, blah, blah, blah. And Dawn kept herself composed extremely well. And she said that they could forgive him, you know, just trying to keep him talking. The conversation is three whole pages long in the book, and apparently the plan with Charlie at the sheriff's house was a go. The caller said that he was actually a family friend, and that's why he couldn't face them directly.
Dawn, can we just give props to how this family is, like,
oh, they're
keeping their shit together when they absolutely have to?
Yeah, they're rock stars.
Yeah. Not all superheroes wear capes. They are doing it.
They're Christian rock stars.
Yeah. I feel like Christians are just on a whole different level of pure.
Well, yeah. I mean, the ones that actually, you know, I mean, this family talks the talk and they walk the walk.
I feel like they will forgive him in the end. Just because that's what God would want.
We'll get there.
I'm not that good of a person.
Neither am I.
Let's keep going.
I want to invent a time machine and go back and like, you know, like Dexter style, the guy that's gonna pull the lever on Larry, just knock him out, and take the mask and go in there myself and do it.
Tape up everything, some plastic.
No, I wouldn't harm. I'd just subdue him and then like change into his clothes so that I could be the one to pull the lever. Yeah, no, he'd be fine. I wouldn't kill the guy. Yeah, you know, I wouldn't kill anybody other than Larry.
Yeah, Dexter Larry.
Yeah, and I wish he had been Dextered rather than fried.
It would have been more satisfying that way.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, Dawn, after he said that, you know, he said that he was a family friend and couldn't face them directly, Dawn said that she swore she heard him choke back laughter when he said that.
Mm.
He then said that he tied Sherry to the bedpost and suffocated her. And he said he never would have taken her if he had known about the disease. Why? He was going to kill her anyway.
And why does this poor family need to hear this?
Yeah.
He is like sadistic as fuck.
He is. I told you.
Like, why do they need the gory details?
Like we had Pee Wee Gaskins. We covered Pee Wee Gaskins, and then we covered the Wish.com Pee Wee Gaskins, which was Mary and Albert Pruitt or Mad Dog. And this puke is the Wish.com version of BTK.
That's what you should name this episode.
I don't know what I've got a while to come up with the name for it though. Dawn asked if Sherry had died at peace, and she said that Larry said that she was happy because she knew God was with her and that she was going to become an angel. Shut the fuck up. God, I hate this guy. I I swear, we'll go through, you know, just like, I going through that three part on BTK was a breeze for me this time around, unlike the first time. But yeah, it's, Ivan Milat, there was some really disgusting shit in that one. Jared Fogle, that one kind of got to me because there was a lot of shit that I didn't know about in that story.
Wait, is that the Subway guy?
That's the Subway guy. That's our current episode that's out right now.
Is it out already?
It's out. It's the current one.
Oh, God. I'm listening to it immediately when we get done. That is, like, that shit blew my mind.
Yeah, mine too. And, well, I get into it in the episode.
Okay,
but,
go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I get into what I was expecting versus what I got in that episode. But it's just like, we can go through all these things and everything, you know, and all of a sudden, the one will come along. It's just like, that just blows my mind. It's just like every time I get to a point where it's just like, okay, you know, all right, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Nothing shocks me anymore.
You feel like you're kind of desensitized to it. And then you run across somebody like this.
Somebody like this that just, you know, I've never seen anybody that just like to, you know, and I'm sure there's more out there. I would just haven't gotten to them yet. You know, that just like to toy with the victim's family. In fact, I know there are. I just can't think of any off the top of my head.
Confidently. Yeah.
Yeah. But what this guy did is just it's just reprehensible. I mean, it's just.
And it's like I don't know if he did it intentionally or if it just so happened to be that way. But why did it have to be, like, the most pure family?
Well, he was just obsessed with Sherry. Yeah, you know, Sherry was gorgeous. I mean, yeah, this is going to be a slideshow. I'll put pictures of her. I'll put pictures of Dawn. I'll put pictures of, you know, I'll put pictures of Larry up with a gun scope on his face. But she was happy because she knew God was with her and she was going to become an angel. It's like, oh yeah, kill me. I'm going to be an angel. I'm going to get my
wings. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh.
Idiot. He also said that he gave Sherry a choice on how she wanted to die. Gunshot, overdose on drugs, or suffocation, and that Sherry had chosen suffocation.
That was so kind of him.
Oh, yeah, he's a nice guy.
Fuck?
Yeah, it's just like BTK saying that he was a nice guy because he made his victims comfortable before he killed them.
Oh yeah,
I would have chosen the gunshot. Just put a gun to my head, pull the trigger.
One quick, like, some. I'm not even gonna feel it. Just get it over with.
But
I don't. Do you really believe that he let her choose?
No.
I was like, I don't believe that.
I don't either.
But I think he chose suffocation because that would have been the most hands on.
Yeah,
and the one that would have been drug out over a longer period of time.
Well, he did say that they were one, and strangling suffocating and strangling are basically the same type of level of personal of it being personal, you know, strangulation and suffocation. I mean,
I feel like a gunshot's like one, you know, one finger move and it's done.
Yeah. I mean,
you have to actually be, like, up close and intimate to be able to suffocate or strangle somebody.
Well, in the BTK series, I compare him to David Berkowitz. You know, just I went into great detail on the serial killers that BTK idolized and everything and why. I mean, that is probably one of the most comprehensive episodes on BTK that you'll find, that my new series.
Yeah, I started it. Friday, and then we had the crazy weekend, so yeah. I haven't even got to finish the first episode.
I'm really proud of that one. I'll put my series up against anybody's. but he also said that she had written the last will and testament of her own free and will. Yeah, with a gun to her head.
Yeah.
Dawn lost her composure and started crying, and she's like. She's like, why'd you have to kill her? He's like, oh, I just lost control. I'm sorry.
Like, yeah. Whoops, my bad.
Giving somebody three choices on how they want to die doesn't sound like losing control to me.
No, it does not.
Whether that's what happened or not, that's not. He did not lose control. Everything happened exactly the way he wanted it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that didn't happen, I can imagine he was probably one of these people that was like, oh, she'll grow to love me.
She'll eventually get Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, that maybe she fought his ass. Maybe she was just belligerent to the end. I hope that's what happened.
I hope so.
So, as Dawn and the killer were wrapping up, Hilda grabbed the phone and she started going off on him, but it quickly turned into a condensed version of what he had told Dawn. It was a long phone call that had been traced to a Grand Central truck stop at I-77 and Highway 200 in Great Falls, South Carolina. I've been there, although that place is closed now. And he, once again, left no evidence there.
So they're able to trace all these calls. He's just doing it from random-ass payphones.
Yeah, and he's leaving no trace of himself. He's wiping the phone clean. He's, you know, he's probably choosing locations to where there's no dirt, just concrete. So he's not going to leave any footprints. And if I remember correctly,
one of those examples of how they're so, like, so smart, but so dumb.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, that particular truck stop, I've been to that truck stop. There's no dirt. There wasn't a dirt lot there. It was all concrete.
So there wouldn't have been a place to mold a shoe print.
Right. Or a tire print. But,
I didn't even think about the tires.
Yeah. So Sherry's funeral was held at Lexington Baptist Church. Friends and family, Sherry's classmates, even strangers attended. The place was packed. And police were there too, looking for anyone suspicious in case this puke decided to show up. As soon as the family got home, the phone rang. Guess who? He began rambling with his coward act, and Don wasn't buying it. He said that he was at the funeral, and he even described a cop that had told him where to park.
So he did. He was there.
He was there.
Balls on this guy.
He told Don to tell the sheriff that he wasn't an idiot. He was actually really smart, and he began describing another surrender plan. Two pages in the book rather than a simple date, time, and location. Next, he began babbling about Sherry's relationship with Richard, saying that she wanted to break up with him, and then back to him being the victim again. And finally, Dawn had enough, you know, and she just went off on him, asking if he had any idea the hell that he'd put them through. Why the hell should they care one bit what happened to him? You know, and he just hung up on her. It seemed like Dawn had scared him off.
Dawn was like, hey, pity party for one, it's over.
Yeah. This call was traced to Augusta, Georgia. Once again, no evidence. John Douglas came through with an even deeper profile. He said that this guy likely had some sort of predisposition to sexual crimes and likely had in his possession something personal to Sherry. Sherry's class ring was missing.
Yeah, he kept trophies.
And he also figured that he was an unskilled laborer with electricity in his voice based on his ability to disguise his voice electronically. He also said that this guy was definitely going to kill, definitely not going to kill himself. And in fact, he was itching to kill somebody else again and soon.
And I feel like John Douglas is 9 times out of 10, he's dead on. He's always right.
He was so spot on with this one. June 14th, exactly to the day, 2 weeks after Sherry was taken, 9-year-old Deborah May Helmick was playing in her with her sister Becky and younger brother Woody in the front yard of their trailer. And their mother, also a Deborah, and their father Sherwood had only moved in 2 months prior. Deborah was getting ready for work. She didn't have a sitter, so she was going to take the kids with her and have Sherwood pick them up from there. But Sherwood got home early that day. Deborah's co-worker Vicky picked her up and they drove off. An unfamiliar silver car drove through the trailer park and it stopped in front of the Helmick's yard and a man got out. A neighbor, 19-year-old Ricky Morgan, heard screams and he came running to see what was up. He got there just in time to see a man cramming little Deborah into the car and peeling out.
And you said she was 9?
She was 9. Ricky burst into the Helmick's trailer telling Sherwood that somebody had just taken his daughter. The little boy, Woody, was found under a bush crying, saying that the bad man was going to come back for him.
Hmm.
Sherwood jumped in his car and took off trying to locate the silver car, but no luck. They called the police, who instantly had a prime suspect. The only problem was they didn't know who he was.
So the police automatically were thinking Larry.
Yeah, but they didn't know who he was.
But they still don't know who he is.
Right. Sherwood's mother picked up Deborah from her job and brought her home. And the police got a description from Ricky. They made a sketch that looked very similar to the one that of Sherry's abductor. The car was an 82 or 83 Grand Prix or a Monte Carlo. Police told the Helmicks about the possibility of phone calls, and a call came later that week, but it was to the Smiths again.
Leave these people alone.
Yeah. Dawn answered. The killer asked about Sherry's ring. She said it hadn't been found, and of course it hadn't. He probably had it in his hand, you know, while he was on the phone. He probably jerked off with it.
I wasn't going to say it. I was like, he's probably jacking off with it.
He then said that God, oh, this is where it gets deep. He then said that God wanted Dawn to join Sherry. He said it was just a matter of time, next week, next month, next year. He said that she couldn't be protected all of the time. So now he's got his sights set on Dawn.
Absolutely not.
He then asked.
This family's been through enough.
Yeah. He then asked if she knew about Deborah Helmick. And she did. And then he said, like, have you heard of Deborah May Helmick? You know, Richland County? Don asked, yeah. Let's go one north, well, one west. Turn left at the Peach Festival Road or Bill's Grill. Go 3.5 miles through Gilbert. Turn right, last dirt road before you come to a stop sign at Two Notch Road. Go through chain and no trespassing sign. Go 50 yards and go left 10 yards. Deborah May is waiting. May God forgive us all. She tried to keep him on the line, but he hung up. And I can't believe that this young woman kept it together after this puke literally threatened her life.
I wouldn't have been able to remember all them turns.
Well, she probably wrote it down.
That child would have been screwed because I would have been so flabbergasted.
She was already dead. But the call had been placed to Palmetto Plaza in Sumter, South Carolina. No evidence, but they went to where the directions said to go, and they found her badly decomposed. She was wearing two pairs of underwear and nothing else, and hers and a bikini style underwear that was adult sized.
That makes my stomach hurt.
The autopsy determined that she was most likely suffocated. And because there were no dental records, a forensic scientist had to examine the photographs and compared the teeth to zoomed-in photographs. It was good enough for a positive match, and a barrette that was found was also identified to be Deborah's. But this case and Sherry's looked to be going cold, but Dawn had a nagging suspicion that Sherry had left a clue in the will.
Ah.
It had been examined by police, but she was looking for something more subtle. She asked the police to go over it again. She didn't know what. She just had a feeling. But this time the police magnified it, like zoomed in, like super magnified it. And it showed imprints from another person's writing, like a page that had been on top of it.
Ah.
This note had been written on a notepad that had been used prior to her using it. And there was a phone number on it to Huntsville, Alabama. They called it, and it went to a hotel that an old married couple named Ellis and Sharon Shepherd had stayed in. On a hunch, when they called the hotel, they asked if anybody had from South Carolina had stayed there, and it turned out to be Ellis and Sharon Shepherd.
Damn.
And the police on this were on point.
Yeah, I love it when they do their job because a lot of these cases they don't.
I know, like the one.
So
I'm
when
working.
They do, it's like it's extra satisfying.
Yeah, the one I'm doing right now for an episode that will be out before this one is an extra episode. Kendall Francois. Yeah, the police really sucked on that one.
Yeah.
But
It's like it's your literal job.
Yeah.
You had one job.
But they had been on vacation for several weeks, and a man who was the electrician's assistant for Ellis's house, you know, They had been on vacation for several weeks in Huntsville, Alabama, and a man who was an electrician's assistant for Ellis, Ellis was an electrician, he house sat for them. He was a normal, mild-mannered man in his mid-30s, divorced, 12-year-old son that he had no contact with, good worker. Douglas nailed it.
Nailed it. Yeah.
This man was obsessed with Sherry's murder, and he kept all the newspaper articles about it, and police played a recording of his voice, and Ellis said, you know, even despite the electronic garbling or whatever, the Ellis said, yep, that's Larry Jean Bell, no doubt about it. Even with the voice distortion.
Got him.
There was a roll of stamps with mallard ducks on them. The same stamp was on the envelope that Bell had mailed to the Smiths, so it was likely that Sherry had been killed at their house as well.
Holy shit.
Yeah. The next day, Bell was taken into custody. Like I said, this is almost as satisfying as the floppy disk.
Almost.
Almost.
Yeah.
At the time, he was living with his parents in Lake Murray, and when they started digging into his background, they found out that he had committed assault and battery in Rock Hill, South Carolina in 1975. He had gotten 5 years suspended sentence with 5 years probation and a fine. Later that year, he was charged with assault. He tried to grab a woman and get her into his car, and she got away. And no time for that one. In 1979, he was arrested for what the book describes as a harassment campaign against a 10-year-old girl. He had made over 80 obscene phone calls to her. You know, but he was on 5 years probation, which should have been a violation of probation considering he still had a year left on probation for the assault and battery in 75.
And can we just normalize if somebody attempts a kidnapping? We should just assume they're going to kidnap somebody eventually.
Yeah.
Like, that's a safe assumption.
Yep. He was also linked to several different missing women's cases in Charlotte, North Carolina from the 70s and 80s. 27-year-old
Hey, that's where I'm from.
27-year-old Priscilla Ann Blevins. She vanished July 7th, 1975, after leaving her home, never to be seen again. The case was cold until 2012. DNA from her sister matched a skeleton that was found off of I-40 in 1985. July 31st, 1975, 21-year-old Denise Porch vanished after showing a man an apartment at a complex that she lived in and managed. This was near Blevins' home, and Larry Jean Bell also lived in the apartment complex, too. Yeah, I guess it was late for rent on August. Yeah, no trace of her has ever been found. 26-year-old Sandy Cornett was last seen by her fiancé, who had left her place on November 18th, 1984, after they had dinner together. The next day, she was gone. She and Larry knew each other, and he lived near her at the time. August 12th, 1985, Larry Jean Bell was indicted for Sherry's kidnapping and murder, and the case was moved to Saluda County because everybody in Lexington wanted to kill him themselves. The trial took place February 10th, 1986. While in custody, he demanded that officials from Charlotte come see him. He wanted to tell him about Sandy Cornett. He said that God was going to reveal to him where the body was, although he never said anything else about it.
That pisses me off.
Yeah. I hope that the people from Charlotte didn't waste the time to come down there.
They probably did.
They probably did, but the book didn't say. During the trial, he pretended to be insane. He pretended to have a split personality. Yeah, you know, he said another evil Larry inhabited his body, and that's probably who killed Sherry.
Okay.
He several times in court asked Dawn to marry him.
That's a hard no.
Yeah.
That's a no for me, dog.
But there was nothing wrong with him. He was just playing another game to torment Dawn.
Yeah, absolutely.
All of the recorded phone calls were played in court as part of the prosecution's case. February 23rd, the case closed and the jury deliberated for 47 minutes. Guilty. And South 47 Carolina.
47 minutes?
47 minutes.
That's got to be some kind of record.
Nah, the record's like three.
Who? What case is that?
It's one that we've covered. I can't remember, but it was like three to five minutes or something like that.
3 minutes. Yeah. They went in and they said, fuck this guy. He definitely did it.
Yep.
Can we get lunch before we go back out, though?
Yeah. So South Carolina sentenced him to death. And on April 2nd, 1987, he was given the death penalty for Deborah Mae Helmick. The jury deliberated for an hour on this one. Yeah, because there was a lot of circumstantial evidence on that one.
Yeah.
Still, only an hour?
I feel like they wasted time.
Yeah. Larry spent the rest of his life at Broad River Correctional Institute. Inmates hated him. He was labeled as a baby killer. He was kept out of Gen Pop for his own protection. He kept trying to convince people that he was insane by eating and drinking his excrement, screaming nonstop, but nobody was buying it.
Oh, God, he took that real far.
Yeah. In 1993, Don was engaged to a man named Will Jordan. Bell found out about this and sent them a card and he wished her a happy 25th birthday and wished them a happy marriage. My question is, why the hell did the prison allow that to be sent?
That was my first thought. Who let that be scanned through as approved?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody should be fired.
Well, Don just threw it away.
But there are people that get paid at prisons to go through the mail.
Yeah.
Who let that go through and was like, this should be fine?
Yeah, that's fine. Just somebody they stalked and threatened and murdered her sister.
Yeah. Ah, it'll be fine. We should let that one go through.
Yeah. 1986, Dawn became Miss South Carolina and runner-up for Miss USA.
Okay.
1995, excuse me, Dawn recorded an album and dedicated it to Sherry. October 4th, 1996, Larry was executed. He rode the lightning. He had a date with old Sparky. And he was given the choice of execution. Oh, how fitting.
How fitting. That well. Yeah.
I wish that they had given him the choice of gunshot, drug overdose, or
strangulation. Or suffocation.
Yeah,
suffocation.
Of course, the overdose could have been lethal injection.
Like we could have got more creative with that one.
Yeah, maybe get some plastic line, like hard plastic lines to distribute it and put hydrofluoric acid in it.
Yeah, like something that would really just drag it out, but be super painful. Maybe give him the shits, you know? Like, I want to get creative with this.
Give him a sardine sandwich with broken glass and metal shavings. He was not Michael Malloy. that would have ripped his insides to shreds.
That episode is hilarious.
It's hard to imagine. That was our first episode, and it still holds up. I mean, you can tell it's an early episode, but it blows all the episodes that comes after it away for at least 15 episodes.
Just unkillable.
Yeah, but he chose the electric chair over lethal injection because he had come to the realization that he was Jesus Christ and that the wood in the chair was the same type of wood from the tree that the cross that Jesus was crucified on was made out of.
He's committed to this part. Like, the commitment is real.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a douchebag. Yeah. But that's it. That's the story of Larry Jean Bell. And I only said,
I cannot believe I've never heard of that.
I only said Hall once.
Yeah, yeah. And you even caught yourself midway through.
Yep. But
yeah, I cannot believe I've never heard that. Well, I mean, in more detail.
I hadn't heard of it either when I lived there. I mean, I've been to several locations. that were mentioned in there, like that roundabout that they were talking about, the traffic mm-hmm. circle, the Prosperity exit and everything off of Highway 378. I've driven there. I even looked on Google Maps and followed the directions that he had given. I mm-hmm. found the spot where she had actually had been dumped on Google Maps, and I've driven right by that. Like literally, I used to work for Rent-A-Center and Aaron's back then.
Mm-hmm.
So, and because of how rural that whole area is, like one store would cover a very wide range, you know? So I've been all through those back roads, all the way from, you know, probably from Rock Hill all the way down, you know, whatever south of like Newberry, south of Columbia and all that stuff, and everywhere in between. I've been on every single one of those roads that was listed. I didn't, you know, and it was just, when I looked at, you know, I found the crossroad, the roundabout that it was talking about, and I followed the directions on the map, and I'm just like, yeah, I've been there. It's like
you're like, damn, I ride, rode right by there.
Right by there. And, yeah. And, but that, yeah, that was weird. That's like, you know, I mean, I wouldn't really call that a personal connection to the case, because it's not, had nothing to do with
it, but it just hits a little too close to home.
Yeah, because I've been like everywhere that mm-hmm. was mentioned, like just every single place that is mentioned in this story, I've been or been close to. I know where it is. But I told you this guy was a sick fuck.
I know, my husband was leaving for work and I was like, I think I'm about to go on a roller coaster ride. He's like, have fun.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the story. And but thank you for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the episode. We appreciate the hell out of you listening. And follow us on our socials. They're all linked on the episode page that I published. definitely give us a like, a subscribe, a review. We're on YouTube as well. All of the episodes from episode 85 on, you're going to have video for, although some of them, like this one, are slideshows. But yeah, and also check out Mama Murdered a Podcast. That's a podcast that's like, you know, I enjoy listening to. Usually, unless covering a case like JonBenet Ramsey, I listen to every episode that she releases.
Well, that's very sweet.
She's sassy, and she gets an attitude with the killers that she, you know, that
I know. Covers. I feel like I get loud to myself. Like I'm in here by myself. I'm in my shed recording by myself. And sometimes I'm like, girl, why are you yelling? Calm down.
Because you get pissed off.
I look over, my little dog's eyes are like, geez, mom, what's going on? Who are we yelling at? Who got in trouble?
But yeah, check us out. You know, follow. If you like us, tell a friend. If you hate us, tell an enemy. And same thing with Mama Murdered a Podcast. And it was It was great having you on, and until next week, later.